Accession number 12710, Mr. J. Avery, Reel 1.
Mr. John Avery, Reel 1. When were you born, Mr. Avery?
18th of the 8th, 18.
And where?
Bishop Auckland.
The particular street in Bishop?
It was at a cottage in on Durham Road in going towards Coney Hill. At my grandma's, That's where I was born.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes. There was three brothers of us and three sisters.
And where were you in that order?
I'm the second oldest in that order.
What did your father do?
He was a... what I knew of my father, like, he was a... he was in the Navy as a petty officer. Well, where I got to know him, he was in the Navy a petty officer. And he was a brass finisher in work sort of style, and then he was a pitman.
Had he been through the First World War?
Yes, he'd been through the first. He was at the Dardanelles.
And you say he was a pitman. Which pit did he work in?
He worked at Auckland Park. Like, you know, that's as much as I know of my father's. What he was employed at and such as that, just what heard my mum say, like, and my grandmother say, that he was a brass finisher. Then I'm going in front of me story sort of style. He was at went to Birtley to live. In them Belgium huts, and that's where he was a brass finisher in the factory that was nearby. I don't know if it was an ammunition factory or what it was then, you see. I was too young to understand. Then when we moved back from Birtley back to Bishop Auckland, then as I say, my mother and father lived in Bishop Auckland, and me and my eldest brother, our Tom, we stopped with my grandmother, you see.
That seems to have been quite common in those days.
Yes.
We had particularly big families that a number would stay with grandparents.
Yes, we did. But me and the eldest brother, Tom, we...
Did your mother work?
No, not that I know of, mind. As far as I know, I never known my mother at work. She had too much to do with keeping.
What kind of a house was it? Was it a large house or a small house that you lived in?
No, it was only a cottage. It was a... I don't know. There's a lot of people... It's been knocked down now, and there's new houses built there. It's the road going up Durham Road, near the bridge, the railway bridge, which is just used now. And just past the railway bridge, going towards Coney Hill Countdown Way, there was a bungalow. There used to be one bungalow there. And there used to be one bungalow on the corner. And there used to be a bungalow across the road, what leading to Grange Hill Farm. I can remember them, but there wasn't so many houses in Durham Road then. That's going back a year or two, sort of style.
How many bedrooms had it?
It had two bedrooms. The bedroom, as I say, was quite big in my grandma's. So that's my grandma's photograph up here, I'll show you. Oh, no, I might move. As I say, it's up there, taken in this bed, one of the bedrooms. which they used to use as a bedroom and a sitting room. It was that big, like say, and the one way, maybe really said, it was down the, some steps into the back one. It was quite a big bedroom. And my grandmother and them lived in the kitchen, the bedroom in the kitchen, what they call the old Lancetel, you know, the old box thing, you used to put the bed up and put it together. And it was quite a big place. And inside that, there used to be the where my grandmother and my mother used to do the washing, which was a big place. There was sort of the old fashioned boiler in there, like you used to light the fire, the old boiler, and used to do the washing in there. It was quite a big place. And old, next to that used to be the pantry, and the pantry used to be stone floor, you know, like slabs. And that was a yard and such as that, like, you know, the, where there was, where we had a, where my brother used to keep rabbits and one thing and another, and hens, stuff like that.
An outside toilet?
Yeah, the outside toilet, yes, outside toilet, yes.
But the earth closet.
The earth closet, yes, that's true. That's going back a lot of years, that.
Where did you start school?
The first school I ever went to, when I wasn't there very long, is when we lived at Birtley. I went to Birtley. I was there, I don't know what they call the school, because I wasn't there that very long. I went to that school, I come back to, as you say, back to Bishop, and went to St. Anne's School. That's next to the Kingsway football ground, St. Anne's School there. And from that school, we left there and went to Barton School, which was in the marketplace. And I did right up to that school there.
What are your memories of schooling?
Oh, well, you know, not a great lot. I mean, as I say, there were happy years times, like, you know, and there were some, you know, rough times, you know, going to school. There were, as I say, that school there, thing you used to call it, every year or so, you used to have what they call the blue coats. And you got a full suit. There's so many, you know, the lads, it was 40, I think, got, if my memory serves me rightly, got these blue coats. And you got shoes and you got a full rig out sort of stuff. And you went to this certain tailor, like, you know, which was Duff, then it was Duff and Rowntree's. And you measured for them. And that was paid by, out of a fund, the Bishop of Durham, Bishop Burton. That's what they call him. There's only two, schools in the County of Durham. Bishop Burton, there's one at Bishop Auckland, and one at Stanhope. As far as I know, like, of that.
So those suits were given to people who couldn't
really afford a lot of things. They were all the poor class, the poor element of the school, like, you know, but they were all there for the Church of England, like, you know, school.
What was the discipline like in school those days?
Oh, very strict and very, you know, reasonable. I mean, when you look back, sometimes you said, oh, that was fair enough, like, you know, but at the present time, you say, like, kick the traces, or so it wouldn't, you know, right? I used to try, like as boys would, as I would have tried to get out of things. But as I say, when you look back at things, you say, oh, it's pretty reasonable. And since then, I've met quite one or two of my teachers, my own teachers, like in capacity with me work, like, you know. When I was with Durham County, you see, I met different school master, school teachers that taught me in different classes, in different schools then.
Are there any teachers that are outstanding in your memory that you particularly liked or had some influence upon you?
Oh, well, I think the main teachers were the most enlightened in me, like sort of style. It was Mr. Lamb, and there was Mr. Sanderson, and there was an old teacher, Mr. King, and we were called Spike Walton, and also a teacher called Huddy, and there was another teacher, his name just slipped my mind, he was headmaster at Shildon County School. Yeah, what a call. He was at Barrington School. He was to deal with the woodwork teaching, like, you know, in the thing. And he was there when I got my toe squashed. One of the woodwork benches just lifted it off. Like, he used to put a big bench top on, like, you know. And that was done for the girls, like, to do coaching on. When we did our session of joinery, we took it off, them off for that, and we were lifting them off, and it slipped, and then I only had sunshades on, it fell and squashed me too. And he was the teacher there. I'll never forget him. When he saw it, he had a rough night the night before. When he saw it, he felt faint, you know. This was over to the doctors, then from the doctors up to the hospital, which was only then was the Lady Edens. Lady Edens then, you know, it's, which is getting in alteration now.
Looking back to you, did you feel that your education helped you at all?
Yes, I think it did. I mean, to be speaking honestly, like, if I'd only stressed in myself, like, instead of hanging back, I think it would have done me more beneficially than it really did. Like, you know, if you try to get off something, you got off it. So if I'd only stuck on at it, I might have been different altogether. But there you are, see. You can't turn the clock back.
What age were you when you left?
14.
And what did you do then?
There was really nothing at the present, which took over. But I went to two or three different jobs. Like, you know, errand boy here, I think it was. And I went to the pit, and I wasn't there very long, neither. It didn't suit me. I didn't like it. And after that, I got a job as a apprentice bricklayer, like, for a Newcastle firm. I'm forgetting their name now. It was McLaren, I think it was.
And how old would you be then?
I'd be what? Let's see. 15 or 16, something in that range, in any road. I couldn't put a pinpoint on it. But any road, as I say, I come back, the war turned out. And
So you worked as an apprentice bricklayer, and you were in your apprenticeship when the
war
arrived.
Well, I wasn't really in an apprenticeship then, as the word says, because the firm finished, like, you know, then, and then I was, when I was about, around about 18, you see. It finished, and I come out on the dole, like, on the dole again, like, you know. But, as I said, the war intervened.
How did you feel on the dole after such a young
age? I don't know. It was just a thing. It was acceptable because there wasn't the work that was around, you see. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't the only myself, like, so I wasn't the only person that was thing. And
did you become involved with Boy Scouts or Church Ladder Brigade?
Yes, I did. I was in the Church Ladder Brigade for many years.
And which church was that based on?
Church of England, like, you know, St. Andrews.
You'd have a uniform to wear. What form did that take?
The first uniform I got was the khaki, and there was riding trousers and the putties. Yeah. So it was shortly after that. What they were, I didn't wear them much longer. And we got the blue trousers and jacket and cap, like, you know. Why, aye. There's a lot of Joe Carr, he was in the 6th Battalion.
The Church Lads Brigade.
And he was in the Church Lads Brigade with me.
Did you take to the discipline all right?
Oh, well, it wasn't no discipline, like, you know, but you did as you were told, like, you know. That's where I learnt the bugle, like, you know, in the Church Lads Brigade. Well, yeah, there was. It just struck me there. Well, Joe, he was a dear lineman.
Were you able to pay and obtain your own uniform for the Church Lads Brigade, or what happened?
Well, you got the. As I say, you got a loan of it, sort of style. You paid so much a week. I think it was a penny or two, I'm not sure. Well, I wouldn't like to pin that down now. I know you paid coppers, and you paid them every week, like. And, you had some really good times, like, you know.
You said that you learnt the bugle there, first got the bugle there. How did that come about? Well, obviously there'd be a number of lads. Why were you chosen for the bugle?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But as I said, with they're all there, then you just grew up going. if they thought you played anything like there was. This lad I'm talking about, Charlie Stubbs, he played the bugle. And there was a lad, Walter Denon, he's still alive, he played, and it would all...
Were you able to read music?
No,
prior
no.
To this? They taught you that?
No, well, you just picked it up by ear. Like, in the Church Lads Brigade, you did, like, you know, you heard somebody play and you just... pick it up.
And were you able to do that quite quickly?
Oh, well, I don't know if it was quickly or not. It seemed to come to me, I don't know. I just, somebody started playing and I used to follow through, and it seemed to me. Well, I don't know if it was quick enough or not. It just seemed to play it right enough.
You said that the war came along. At what stage did you join the...
When I joined the TA, it was 1934.
What made you do that?
Well, as I say, they were all going about. My brother was in, and all, you know, all the most of the lads like us was joining, and so I said, all right, I said, I'll join, like, you know. And that's where they did learn how to play a bugle. Because there was a bugle major in there called Gussie Holland. And, oh, he was strict. When I play, like, you know, when I first went, I thought I could play. He said something I couldn't, like, you know. But he said, I'll make you a bugler. Which he did, but he put me through other times, like, you know. He said, I want you to write. And he could stand away from me and he could hear you missing a note or hadn't hit the right note, you know. But that's where we learned more musical off the board. Chalk, like, you know. He used to say, that's so and so, so, and he picked it up as he, on the board. And
where was the Territorials based in Bishop Auckland?
It was in Railway Street, Union Street. You know, the Hippodrome is there, that little short street, Union Street, there.
How often did you meet?
Well, it used to meet pretty regular, like, you know, with Tuesdays. I just forget what days they were now. But there used to be, before the camp, like, you used to have so many what they call drills in before you qualified for what they call a bounty, you know. So it was pretty regular, like, you know, if there was any special effort on, like, the armistice sooner or any special big parade, like, you used to go there and churn up, like, you know, get set.
And so you would go to your drill hall. What would be a typical night that you might spend in the drill hall?
Oh.
In your particular case, being a bugler.
Well, you'd go through different marches, combined marches, whichever was selected for the march, like, you know, and you would go through them.
What uniform had you been issued with in the Territorials?
Territorials was khaki, like, you know, then. As you say, you've seen the old 1914 when we first started, you see. And when the band, we got band uniforms, the green trousers, red piping, the blue, like the greeny layer tunic, sort of say. And the cup, like, you know, what it was called, a cheese curry. And that's when you were on special parades, but when you're doing honorary duty, you just use the khaki.
Did you do other duties other than playing the bugle?
No, not then. We did nothing. Well, we did used to go, and sometimes at the weekends, which was a lot of then, to Whitburn, which we used to call. We used to go there, and we used to bugle there. All the calls of the day, like, you know, for the Valley Post, Lights Out, you know, and such as that, Coke House and all that sort of effort. Then we may have a fire on the range.
So you were training with the rifle as well?
Yes, we trained. We never had a one, but we got the rifle then. They used to learn you with a rifle then.
Did they teach you any special duties regarding, say, if there was problems, if there was a war, for example? And as a bugler, did you have any specific...
Yes, well, this is what we're... We learned later, that after that, just before the war, we learned what I call the machine gun, Lewis gun. The Lewis gun, we learned that. And we used to go through that. That was before the war. And we used to go to Whitburn and fire that. I mean, you had to be old enough to fire them. Like, you know. I mean, see, as I say, when I was 14, 15, see, he wouldn't allow you. You see. But when he got aged up a bit, 17, 18, you were allowed to fire. Because as I say, when you did go to camp, Gussie Holland, if you were going out, like, you know, he used to inspect it upside down, and you had to be in at a certain time. We couldn't come in at late. I think it was be 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock in there, report of him. And if you weren't there, Hody, he'd be the extra duties for you, bugling or Hody, it was them. But as I say, he was a strict disciplinarian, yeah, he was. Oh, he was a Queen's bugler.
And as a bugle band, you kept together, and he was in charge.
He was in charge, yes, Oh, it was a good thing. I can remember at the Musk, when there was 4 battalions of us. It was 6th, 7th, 8th and 9th in the camp then. Marched the 7th battalion, I think it was the 7th battalion, out of the camp in mass bands. That was the 4 bands, band and bugles. And he was seniority, it was Cushion, he led the full parade out. Senior bugle major. You may have seen one tattoos, like, you know, there's 4 bugle majors. There's 1, 2, 3, and the main one, the seniority man, in front. And we played them out here. It was Musk then.
Is it very difficult to blow a bugle?
Well, to some people it is, but...
Is there any trick or...?
No, I don't think so. It's just your lips and tongue. You've got to have good teeth, like, you know. And I can play a note at all, but false teeth is slip, you say.
The bugles you played with, how old were they? What kind of...
Well, the ordinary ones we used to play with were brass. But when you do ceremonials, they're the silver bugles. And mine, you got one to keep as long as you were there, like, you know, in that band. Mine was Il 60.
So they were named after a
battle? A battle, yes. And, or some officer presented one, like, you know.
And was there any kind of figuring or working on them?
Oh, yes, there was the... There was the DLI and, you know, inscriptions on all that. And on the... there was one there, a bugle. It was like a one-out sort of style. Saying it had a bent, like a rock, you put the mouthpiece in. That piece, it had a ring, bent, like, you know, round, instead of being straight, like. And that was that bugle was presented years ago, like, from the ladies of Cowden. That's what we were told, like, you know. And it had a lot of decorations on rose, like, you know, as well. Oh, it was a lovely thing. And that was one of the lads that I couldn't tell you now who got it, like, but I could always remember my own, because when you used to go for them, like, and they were all in the box, you should know where yours was, like, you know. But you never used them ordinary, just ceremonial.
And you kept them clean yourselves, did you? And were they inspected?
Well, when we had them, we did. We just cleaned them down. But we never polished them. After we handed them back in again, we never polished them then. They were polished up by, I don't know who. But they were put in a big box, like, and they were all had in sections. You just put it in the places in its partition where it was at. But they were always clean.
Was there some expectation that buglers or bandsmen would become stretcher bearers if in action? Was this part of the training?
No, not really. It didn't happen to us. This is what we thought, like, you know, like, when we were younger, in the band, but what come was brought out that the buglers would be what we call a ACAC platoon. defense of the HQ, a Bren gun mounted on a tripod. Or then, as they say, we learn the Lewis gun, which then you could put mount on a tripod Lewis gun, you see. But the, when the war broke out, we didn't get Lewis guns, we got Bren guns.
Were there any other weapons that you were learning or had experience of?
Well, later on the war did. Later on, further into the war, yes.
Did you cease to become a bugler after the war got started?
Yes, you cease to become a bugler until you come to a static place. Then you say, pick it out, I want the buglers there to... The valley in Ornan and the last post and all that, you know. They used to get that. That's when it used to happen.
You mentioned your bugle major prior to the war. Were there any other NCOs
yes.
or officers?
Well, I mean, to say before the war started, we had this Gussie Holland. He finished before. Because he was a postman at Gainsford. He left, and the sergeant was Sergeant Bradley.